seriously, that we don't start our show that way, ever. We never start our show that way.
Well, because it's not always May the 4th.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes, May the 4th. And the
so you're making fun of all the people with speech impediments?
Yes, pretty much. And the fact that Chewbacca died this week.
All right. Peter Mayhew. Can we start the show officially, please?
All right, just give me a second.
Why would you
talk,
get so
talk
cheesy?
To make it sound smooth.
Oh, here we go. Yeah. Talk to make it sound smooth?
Ladies and gentlemen,
you're listening to The Drew Marshall Show.
Good morning.
Good morning. We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Drew and Drew and Drew.
Good morning. Good morning.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. It's a very special show today. It's the last May 4th that our show will be celebrating. I don't think we've ever actually celebrated the May the 4th We With You thing.
It just happens if things fall. Like, Remembrance Day was 1 year, so I played the pipes, and if it doesn't, then...
Right.
Yeah.
So because May the 4th fell on a Saturday this year, and because we were able to reach out and connect with a pretty cool guest...
Dude.
I thought of all of you, actually.
Of course.
And Noelle. She's a bit of a Star
nice.
Wars nerd.
Yeah, and formerly Chewbacca over here with the hair.
A lot of stuff happening on the show. I'm not going to tell you anymore. Normally we start off with a live recording artist, but today we're starting off the show on May the 4th with Todd Fisher. He's the brother of Carrie Fisher, of course, Princess Leia. Wow, should I try that with my lips?
You thought about Princess Leia.
And I got all stumbly with my
lips. Of course.
Princess Leia from Star Wars. He's the son of Hollywood legend Debbie Reynolds from Singing in the Rain. Of course, this is her in the background. Have a listen.
Good morning.
I wonder if that's how she woke him up.
It's one of those things like, your mom's so cool. He's like, no.
No, it's not cool.
No,
she comes in every morning, thinks it's hilarious, and goes, good morning. And of course, his dad was recording artist Eddie Fisher. He's the author of a really interesting book called My Girls, A Lifetime with Carrie and Debbie. And Todd Fisher joins us from the golf course.
Really?
Dude,
yep.
When do you tee off? In about 25 minutes, yes?
I do, but I warned everybody that I was on a mission here to make sure that we paid appropriate tribute to Carrie and Debbie, and so they all had to tolerate me. Normally, you're not allowed to have cell phones on the golf course. And I'm playing with the owner of the course, so he was like, all right, we're going to make an exception because you're paying tribute to Carrie and Debbie.
Nice.
And, yeah, well, so you brought up the good morning thing. No, my mom never came in singing good morning. In fact, more likely would have said, did you do your homework? You know, those sort of things.
Yeah.
It resounded much like every other mother when it came to those things. But she did sing to me at night occasionally, like Away, Away, Come Away With Me from How the West Is Won.
Ooh.
And I'd be asleep before we got into the chorus.
Yeah.
Nice.
I would sing Kenny Loggins' lullaby songs to my kids. Yeah, that was a little later.
Well, so a little different generation.
A little different generation.
And you guys were hitting heavy on the May the 4th Be With You. I think that's awesome because, you know, that's become sort of a standing tradition. And, of course, Carrie is such an integral part of the Star Wars storyline and just the entire, I guess you'd say, the spirit of it, you know, really rings through her life in real life, you know, and in the story. And I think that's why George picked her, was that she was kind of this little Beverly Hills princess, and it really came off like that. You know, and when he saw her, it was like, well, hell yeah, of course, she's got, who else is going to tell Darth Vader where to get off?
Yeah, exactly. That's funny. Now, Todd, hold on a second. I actually wanted my first official question to be something very heavy, very deep. I want to get right into it. Are you ready?
Go. I am always ready.
Okay. Do you still have a problem taking showers every day and putting on makeup?
Yes, I do. In fact, I haven't put on makeup in quite some time. That was definitely an area that was a turnoff.
So,
you know, when you're 11 years old and somebody says, hey, let's, you know, you want to be in the show and in Vegas. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, I mean, who wouldn't want to do that? It sounds like fun, performing with Debbie in a 25-piece orchestra. And, you know, it's like, okay, that sounds cool. Now, but there's something else that happens that's in the fine print. And so when you arrive on the scene, every day you have to shower and wash your hair. Now, when you're like 9 or 10 years old, you know, this is a serious deal breaker. And I was already into it before I realized what was coming at me here. And in those days, you wear stage makeup, which is like a heavy...
Oh, yeah.
Only women will appreciate this. It's like a pancake,
yep,
gooey bullshit thing you put on your face.
Right.
Just so you look like you're tan. I was like, hey, you know, This whole thing is I'd rather lay in the sun or
right,
something.
Anything. Right, right. Oh, man.
So that's partly, that was influential. That type of stuff is what drove me behind the scenes.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, there was two things that put me behind the scenes. First one was that. The second one was, in our family, somebody had to be the designated driver. And so, you know, our family, in many ways, was coming off the rails, just like every other family. Ours just a little bit more public.
A little more public, yep.
You know, so Carrie used to say our family wears our underwear on the outside of our clothes.
Mm-hmm.
And from there, everything is basically public for public consumption.
So you guys really were superheroes, right? I mean, if you're wearing the underwear on the outside, you're superheroes. That's phenomenal.
You know, I hadn't actually drawn that connection there. I appreciate that. I'm going to feel better about this
good.
Every minute.
Good. Anything I can do to help your game that starts in 23 minutes, yeah, we're good.
Cool with that.
Okay, so listen. 813 Greenway Drive, it's a chapter in the book, it's a screenplay, it's the place you guys grew up in. You could walk to the Beverly Hilton, Beverly Hills High School, the LA County Golf Club was in your backyard, but dude, you could walk to the Playboy Mansion. You want to just run that by me, please? Help me understand that?
Well,
what the heck?
So that we, you know, actually where I grew up, before we went to Greenway, was a street called Conway, which was just two blocks away from the Playboy Mansion. But at 3 years old, I don't think I would have
had
what was going on over there.
No. Now, who lives? But hold on. Who lives at 813 now? Do you know?
I'm not sure. But after we left, Julie Andrews and Robert and Blake moved in there. And it's a really magical house. More, I think, for children than adults, potentially.
Yeah.
But, you know, because it was a very big place with multiple swimming pools and a lot of, I built a Western town in the backyard when I lived there.
I'm sorry. You know, Hold on.
Back up.
You built a Western town in your backyard.
Yeah, well, as you might know, in those days, MGM was going out of business, so they were bulldozing the back lot. So I took it upon myself, as my mother was rescuing the costumes and everything else, to go salvage the Western town, brought like 10 buildings back to the backyard of Beverly Hills, set it up along this fence line, which in the way background, if you kind of got a pie up, you could see Century City being built. And I was like, of course we could have shootouts and, you know, think of the fun and the creative things. Now, my mother was the type of mom, and this is important for moms, you know, she did absolutely nothing to stifle our creativity. If, you know, she reeled us in terms of making us completely spoiled brats, you know, like if you said, I'd like a Ferrari or something, you know, she would have said, yeah, right. But you have to earn it in our family.
Yeah.
And so creativity was connected to earning things. So like the idea that I wanted to build this town, make movies, have my friends over and be creative in that way, she felt that was a good thing, even though I trashed the backyard.
Wait, who was, you said who lives that moved in after you again? Robert Blake and who? Julie Andrews
and Blake Edwards, excuse me.
Blake Edwards. Oh, I was like, man, Columbo and Mary Poppins dated or were married or whatever?
You know, now Columbo actually lived down the street next to Lucille Ball. He lived on Roxbury. And Miguel Ferrer, my best friend, lived across from there. It was a small little circle, and within a few minutes on bicycle, you could pretty much hit any of those spaces. It was a little further to get to the Playboy Mansion, and you couldn't see anything until we were more into our 20s, and then there was plenty to see.
Yeah, well, then you could afford the telescopes, you know, so.
Well, no, then we knew the front door code.
Oh. Oh, that's funny. We're chatting with Todd Fisher. Of course, he's the son of Debbie Reynolds and Eddie Fisher and sister to Carrie Fisher. I mean, it just goes on and on here. So let's get into a couple things here. First of all, you were 6 months old when your dad split, right? And he ended up with Elizabeth Taylor. How old was Carrie? Carrie was 2 years older than you, is that right?
About a year and a half.
Okay.
But the reality is she did have a time to bond with him in a different way than me. I didn't really know the guy.
Yeah.
So when he left, it was kind of meaningless in terms of me. I had connected with my mother.
Yeah.
I never really knew the missing father, where she was constantly reaching out and looking for his acceptance, and it wasn't there. And so that was a little bit more difficult on her than me. But, of course, the world was shocked, you know, by the morality that this man could leave this poor woman and her two baby children and the most beautiful couple in the world,
sure.
You know, a couple of America. It was a scandalous thing in those days. That literally people wanted to lynch the guy.
Yeah, because there was no Jersey Shore on TV, so.
Yeah, no balance whatsoever.
No, No.
Now, the irony of all of this is that all of this, of course, was going on everywhere in the country and in the world.
Exactly.
And, you know, once again, everybody's being pseudo-judgmental. And to be honest with you, my dad, you know, they were both pretty young and foolish. And it's such a cliche that you marry somebody, and there was a whirlwind around them when they got married. And so the truth is, I don't judge him. Of course, you look at a picture of Liz Taylor at that point, and you're a guy, you'd really not judge him.
No.
But I didn't really fall into line on that till I was in my 20s, and I was like, holy mackerel, yeah. I could sort of see what happened here.
Now, so hold on, who was your father? Because I heard, you know, you had a couple of different stepdads along the way or whatever, but Eddie was the best of all the fathers?
Well, that's my sister and I surmised that after the other two husbands, you know, basically were con men, or in the case of Harry Carl, he was a loving guy, but he was an addict, an alcoholic, and a gambleaholic, and, you know, lost all of her money and his money and other people's money, and, you know, did it all while being pretty hammered and nobody quite knew. He was a little bit like the way Dean Martin acted. He was always a little tipsy and always had a glass. The only difference was Dean was faking it. He wasn't.
But,
you know, in those days, nobody really judged alcoholism, didn't even really have a name for it. It would have to be some radical extreme case for anybody to even notice it.
Yeah.
Whereas in the case of her third husband, Richard Hamlet, you know, he was a complete, con artist.
He was a gold digger.
Her money.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And wanted her money. And that was the worst of all, because the other two guys were actually nice people. This guy was, you know, did it maliciously.
Okay, so now I don't even know how to ask this. So let me try to soften the blow by using some names here. Who's Bubba?
Bubba? Well, that was Carrie would call my mom Bubba.
And who's Tafish?
Tafish.
Tafish.
T-A-F-I-S-H. That is me, because my housekeeper / nanny, who when Carrie and I were like, you know, 8, 10 years old, would wake us up for school. And her name was Mrs. Yang, and she didn't enunciate very well. So she would come down the hallway and knock on Carrie's door. That was first. And she'd say, Callie Fish, time to giddy up for school. I love you, baby. Then I'd hear a little shuffle, shuffle, shuffle. She'd get to my door, knock, knock, knock. Ta Fish. Time to giddy up for school. I love you, baby. So she couldn't say Todd. She couldn't pronounce an O. So I became Tafish. So Carrie, for the rest of our lives, called me Tafish.
Tafish, okay. How come?
I never told anybody that, by the way, till Carrie passed away, because that was our code, our private code.
Exactly. Okay. How come Tafish's life didn't tank because of daddy issues, but Carrie's did?
Well, I don't pretend to know what it's like, you know, to be in her shoes and have those daddy issues, but I can just say that my mother was an amazing mom. We were very, very tight. My mother was a person of faith. If you talked to her at any moment, she was a person who walked a very, very beautiful life. And not only did she inspire and entertain people, but she helped so many people through various charities and causes. And of course, if you said, Debbie, how do you get through all of this crap? She always said, you know, I talk to God every day. You know, she was a Christian. She believed in Jesus. The only reason why she wasn't like church going is they threw her out of the church when she did Singing in the Rain, because, you know, she showed her legs. And,
oh,
you know,
my goodness.
That's such a big deal. The Nazarene church at that time.
Oh, yeah, the Nazarenes. Oh, man.
Yeah, so they forgot the part in the Bible where it says, judge not lest ye be judged.
Yep.
It skipped that part. Maybe it wasn't in their translation, but at any rate, out she went. And then, like, years later, when she, of course, was famous and everything, they tried to get her back, and she was like, hypocrites, nice talking to you. But, no, so the way that she got, I had this front row seat to see her not only live her life in this way of helping others in this charitable Christian way, but also really, when she was troubled or beaten, you know, she turned to her faith and prayer and God, and not in some pseudo-religious word. I did a television show many years ago where I made fun of Christian vernacular. I called it Christianese, where people are talking in some sort of a dialogue that the rest of the world is like, what are you talking about?
Was that the show you did with Dan Aykroyd and Renee Russo?
Yes, it was. It was called Nightlight. And it was a religious satire show, very pro-God, and I got a lot of people to do it that were like Dan Aykroyd, for example, that are that have the Christian background, but they don't want to play religion.
Yeah. That's interesting, you know. So hold on now. Did Dan and your sister date? Was that true?
Oh, no, they were engaged.
They were engaged.
He threw her over for Paul Simon, and I always felt that was one of her larger mistakes, because Danny's a really nice guy, and Paul was a bit like my dad. Now, when my mother, many years ago, before she married my father, she was doing a film called The Tender Trap with Frank Sinatra, and Sinatra was several years older, and they're the romantic interest in the movie, but Sinatra didn't try to take advantage of her. He said, now, Debbie, look, I just want to give you one little piece of brotherly advice here. Whatever you do in life, do not ever marry a singer.
Yes.
So within a year, she went out and married my dad, of course, the narcissistic singer. And then, ironically, my sister, you know, did the same thing.
Yeah.
Now,
with Paul,
you know,
Simon.
Parents love. Yeah. Now, parents, by the way, Paul's a nice guy until you're married to him, and then he's a narcissist. But it's like, you know, your parents go through life and they say, you know, man, it would be awesome if you didn't fall in the same hole that I fell in.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
Let me just point it out to you. Here it is. You're about to fall in it. And, of course, there she goes.
Yeah.
And she did, and that didn't last very long. But, you know, they're almost like too intense, you know, real intense, those two. And you put the two of them together, and it's like mixing toxic chemicals.
Yep. Unbelievable. Okay, so you were more like your mother than Carrie was. And Carrie was more like the man that left her, right? I mean, both she and her father were bipolar. Is that right?
There's some truth to that. No, my dad was never medicated, so nobody really... I mean, he was medicated, but just not by doctors.
Right.
You know, so a lot of people really didn't know what you were going to get there. But yes, no, we believe that he certainly was bipolar.
Yeah.
Carrie became more infamous because she was born in the world when these things could be dealt with by doctors.
And isn't it great that Carrie was the one that came out with it, you know, that the media or TMZ didn't try to throw her under the bus and blow it up for her. She came out and did it and told everyone.
Okay, so that leads to a great story. So after Carrie passes away sometime later, the press, you know, manages to get Carrie's blood work from the hospital because they're scumbags. and then the press calls me up and they say, so we'd like to get a comment. You know, they found drugs, you know, in Carrie's blood work, you know, cocaine and opioids. And I was like, wow, there's a news item.
Yeah.
Carrie did drugs.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're kidding me. Yeah. I was like, oh, do you read any of her books where she outed herself? She was the first one to point out her flaws. But does that discount all the good? You know, nobody's freaking perfect. I think hopefully everybody's figured that game out.
Yeah.
But yet, look at the great things that Carrie was able to do, the way she inspired people. I mean, it's remarkable.
Yeah.
So are we going to discount that because she had a drug problem?
No.
I'd say not a chance. And she was the first one to make fun of herself and to talk about all of her imperfections and laugh about it. And that's what makes it acceptable.
All right, we're chatting with Todd Fisher. We're going to wrap it up real soon here because he's got to hit the sticks. Todd, of course, is brother of Carrie Fisher, Princess Leia from Star Wars, son of Hollywood legend Debbie Reynolds, singing in the rain, recording artist Eddie Fisher. He's the author of this book, though, and this is what I want to drive everyone to as well, My Girls, A Lifetime with Carrie and Debbie. His website is toddfisher.com. Todd, what scene was it in Bright Lights that Carrie had to leave the theater because she was so upset?
That was the scene with my father. She had not seen this scene that we filmed many years before, just before my father had died. She had sort of had this moment where, again, she was reaching out for his acceptance. And it's a very intimate moment, and he's not in very good shape at all. And she says, do you love me? And, I mean, it's a very hard scene for anybody to watch, but she had never seen it and literally had to leave the theater and fell apart, you know. And I hadn't. The thing is, nobody expected that to be an ambush because we had sent her a copy of the film long before we all ended up in the middle of you know, this New York Film Festival.
Sure.
But it turned into an ambush because she'd never watched that part.
Wow.
And so that was devastating for her too. But on the other hand, it's kind of a beautiful thing too, because they did come full circle. And, you know, and they were able to say those words. And what's very important is that you don't find yourself in a position in life where those people you love are leaving or have gone, and you have not been able to say the things that you want to be able to say. You have not been able to say that you love them and the important parts of that. And so many people they miss that because of their ego, because of a fight or something. So the beautiful part there is that, especially with Carrie, my mother, there were really no words left unspoken between us. So when they left, as heartbreaking as that is, it's a beautiful thing, because I don't believe, first of all, that this is the end of the road and we shall all meet again. And so with those moments and knowing that those things be true, it's not as hard to deal with the losses.
Okay. If Carrie was still with us, what part of the book would she get up in your grill about?
Oh, I don't know. You know, that's a good point. I've never been asked that question, but you know, I don't really think there's much about it that Carrie... Well, she doesn't like me out talking about her drug use or how difficult it was for, you know, for the rest of us. You know, there's a people who do drugs and alcohol or whatever, they don't realize the damage that they do cause to those that love them. And so there was difficult parts for my mother and I. We were running around, as I said, trying to cover for her. And that those are difficult things. And I don't think Carrie would like to talk about that. So, and generally, if you ever tried to go that way when she was around, you know, she'd like to get into sort of like another subject. So I don't think she'd be thrilled about that too much. But you know what? There are lots of other family members on Earth dealing with exactly those things.
Yep.
So the reason why she'd be cool with it now that she's gone is because I cannot tell you how many thousands of people have written me and feel inspired or able to feel like they're not alone in these kinds of problems in life and how to deal with them. And I think that's what we're all here for.
Now, your mom said, I want to be with Carrie, because she had found out that, you know, Carrie had just passed, and then your mom died shortly after. And I know you thought that was a magical and beautiful thing. But wasn't there a part of you, Todd, that sort of said, hey, Mom, what about me?
Well, that came up between us within, by the way, that all happened within about an hour. It happened right in front of my face.
Yeah.
So she said to me, I want to be with Carrie. Immediately she said, I mean, I don't mean that I don't love you. And I was like, yeah, like you really need to say that. We didn't need to.
Got it.
Say run check on that stuff.
Got it.
But she felt like she had to say it. And then within literally minutes from that type of a conversation, she closed her eyes and went to sleep and never awoken again.
Crazy.
And as I was in the hospital when they told me the game was up, of course I went out and I had this overwhelming wave of grief. And then it stopped like the wave laps up on the shore. And I flashed back on these words that she had given me just an hour or so before, and asking my permission to leave the earth and telling me what she was doing and then doing it in front of me. What a beautiful gift in many ways, and it calmed me.
Sure.
As much as I was grieving and I had a serious loss, I was still like, wow, that is truly an amazing gift from an amazing person.
Okay, final question, then it's time to hit the sticks. Todd Fisher on the line with us. Todd, you're a Jesus guy.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, Carrie used to call me her born-again brother. That was how she'd introduce me.
How has your spiritual journey changed over the last 20 years? Because this Jesus stuff has been around in your life for a long, long time.
40 years.
How many years?
40.
40 years, okay. So how has it changed? You know, you and I talked briefly earlier this week, and I told you a little bit about my stuff, but I for our listeners, man, how has your Jesus journey changed, morphed?
Well, when I first became a Christian, of course, you know, this is all very new, and you're trying to follow what you're being told, and, you know, I was getting a bit of the typical mainstream Christianity, and within that, there's a lot of rules and regulations that you accept initially because, after all, those in charge say you should, but I did start to question those things later, and a lot of them had to do with, you know, like, judge not, lest ye be judged. Like the fact that I had, you know, gay friends. Like the fact that you would get question might be posed to you, you know, so if I don't believe in Jesus, does that mean we're all going to hell if we don't? And, you know, these are tough questions in those worlds. And I started to think to myself, now, wait a minute, if Jesus was here, what would he be up to? And then I started looking at how he responded to questions, and he never gave a straight-up answer. It was always a parable. It was always beautifully woven, and it was never judgmental. In fact, quite to the contrary, he was always accepting all the other folks. And so I felt like what changed in me is I became far more tolerant. My faith and my patriotism are inexplicably woven together. I feel this country is awesome, and it's bound with our Creator and even the forefathers' desire to intertwine that in there. And I felt that it became more about community, family, love, and less about rules and judgment and us giving out the judgment. Like, we're in some hotshot position to judge other people. Give me a frickin' break. You know, it's a joke. And Carrie lived a life like this too, you know. She laughed through her tears and through her problems, and that laughter heals. And so those are the things you learn as you become more educated, more experienced in life. And I don't think Christ would be here to judge, but I think he would be here to love and to save.
What a great hit it and quit right there, man. Really well done. What a pleasure to talk with you, Todd Fisher. I know you're going to go hit a round of golf, but then I know you're going to go home and your wife, Kat, is going to have the chickens. She's going to have the chickens hypnotized. They'll be walking through the house and, you know.
Yes, indeed. You know, Kat right now as we speak is out there with her emu, her chickens, her geese. You know, she's got, like, unbelievable pets, and they're all really, like, the loves of her life. She loves these little animals. They're really special. And, you know, she rescues all animals. She rescues dogs. I mean, everything. The other day, we had some bees swarming, and she made me call the beekeeper to rescue the bees. There's no end to it.
Well, one of these days.
My friend just brought up the point that she rescued me. That was the next.
Oh, nice, nice. Well played. Well played. Well, of course, we got to have a little tip of the hat to Chewbacca today. We just lost the actor.
Peter was awesome, by the way. He was a beautiful guy. My sister and him had an amazing relationship, as different in height as they were.
Yeah.
They were equal in spirit.
Yeah. Well, maybe Kat will bring home a Chewbacca and rescue one of them.
It's a Wookiee.
Anytime.
I mean, a Wookiee. Sorry.
Wookiee.
I don't know the names. Okay. Todd, listen, go have a great round. What are you doing? 18, 9, 36?
18. I'm playing at Southern Highlands Country Club in Las Vegas, a beautiful golf club, one of the nicest in Vegas, if not the nicest for sure.
Beautiful.
And I have great, great friends of mine that we play with every week. And a buddy of mine, Greg Jafria, is a guy from the band Angel, and he and I have been friends for 43 years. He's on the team today, and it's a lot of fun.
Very cool. Well, listen, man, may your force be with you.
Thank you, pal. I appreciate it. Have a great show.
You know what I'm saying. Thanks, Todd. Take care, man.
Yeah, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye. I got all spiritual there at the end. Did you like that?
Yeah, it was awesome. I at the end there, I was thinking, instead of a Western town, he should see if there's a Noah's Ark set that he could put in his backyard with all those animals.
Yeah, because that hasn't been done already.
Well, he could have.
They built a big real life Noah's Ark.
I was making a connection to earlier in the show.
No, it was a horrible idea, Tim.
Sorry.
Remember, Fred Kynes taught us how to make the lightsaber noise?
I always was able to make it.
Oh, you could. Oh, look, here we go again. But it starts with a.
Oh, yeah.
And then it goes.
Oh, you weren't here when we were. When I was.
Can't hear you.
Setting up the songs. You know, you've got the line that trails out showing how long a song
Nobody
is.
Nobody cares
and
about
stuff.
This.
Well, the different.
Yes, organized. It was a lightsaber. Yeah. I was here.
Okay, nice talking.
You are such a nerd. You are nerding out today.